Om, welcome to study of Bhagavad Gita. Each time that we come together, when I'm with you, I begin with a very short prayer, and then I share a review of teachings from Yogacharya O'Brien, a few comments of my own, and then a little bit of time for sharing. So let us begin with a grounding prayer. As we approach this time of study of Bhagavad Gita, we offer our pranams, our respect and gratitude to all of the gurus, the teachers in our lineage of Kriya Yoga, and other awakened teachers who have shared commentaries on this sacred text. Mostly we bow to our own soul nature and we open to our innate knowing of the truth of our being and the way to awaken. Om, peace, peace, peace. So let's begin by remembering that the Bhagavad Gita, also called the Song of God, is a dialogue between the seeking soul and God as the guru within. Arjuna and Lord Krishna represent those two dimensions of our own inner life. And so the Gita invites us into that dialogue. What questions are arising within us today about how to live the spiritual life? What questions are arising and what guidance is emerging from the higher self? So, as we listen, we contemplate the teachings as our own inner conversation, allowing discernment and intuition to clarify how we live a spiritually conscious life. So in chapter 5, the Yoga of Renunciation opens with Arjuna's familiar question: Is renunciation, withdrawal from worldly activity, is renunciation the fastest path to enlightenment? It certainly appears that way. Wouldn't retreating from the world make it easier to reach samadhi and higher states of realization? Yet, Krishna advises Arjuna to engage in action to fulfill his duty, his dharma. Why would action be recommended with when withdrawal from the world seems simpler? In verses 1 through 5 of chapter 5, Krishna explains that karma yoga, the path of action, and samkhya or jnana yoga, the path of wisdom, are not ultimately different. Their goal is the same: self and God realization and liberation of consciousness. They differ only in method. So, why recommend the life of a householder? What Zorba the Greek famously called the full catastrophe. Life in the world is complex. Relationships, work, family, civic responsibilities, service roles, all of it can feel like a whirlwind. And sometimes for spiritual practitioners, carving out time for meditation, study, and self-care is not easy. So how do we find renunciation in the midst of so much responsibility? How do we experience non-attachment when we care deeply about so many things? Karma Yoga has a plan for that. The path of Karma Yoga. Renunciation does not mean refusing to act. It means renouncing attachment to action and its results. Renouncing attachment. In this way, action is no longer performed to enrich the ego, but as an offering for the welfare of all. Before coming to the path of spiritual awakening, before spiritual practice, you know, our motivations can be varied. Looking for success, approval, a sense of security, happiness, even self-improvement. But Karma Yoga, in Karma Yoga, there is only one motivation. Awakening. Living a spiritually realized life. A karma yogi engages in action only to purify the heart and mind, offering all action to the divine without attachment or expectation of reward. That's tricky, isn't it? Because we think if we're practicing, practice, 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 we're going to purify heart and mind. But at the same time, we cannot be attached even to purifying heart and mind. It's the wrong context. So through this practice of Karma Yoga, desire, aversion, and egoic ownership of results are restrained. As the mind becomes purified, the divine self is naturally revealed. As Patanjali tells us, when the fluctuations in the Yoga Sutras, when the fluctuations of the mental field are restrained, what we truly are, pure, unchanging divine consciousness, reveals itself. Nothing is created. It's simply revealed. Self-knowledge blooms on its own when the mind is clear. For householders, this means all action becomes sadhana. Cooking, doing the dishes, cleaning the cat litter, all of it. All of it, seriously, all of it becomes sadhana. Relationships, work, responsibilities, everything is spiritual practice. Karma Yoga simplifies life by making it all about one thing. It gives us the North Star, awakening. Is this action and the way I'm offering it going to lead me toward spiritual awakening, or is it going to just strengthen my ego sense of I, me, and mine? The Samkhya yogi, the wisdom yogi, by contrast, renounces action through wisdom, recognizing that action occurs through the gunas, the qualities of nature. Two paths. The senses, the mind, and objects of perception are agents of action, not the eternal self. The self, the higher self, is the witness, not the doer. Even in meditation, the witness, not the doer. And the teachings tell us that desire and attachment are natural. But they also can cause suffering and bondage. Karma yoga is considered easier because it does not deny any action. It only renounces desire of the fruits of action. In doing so, the karma yogi becomes a renouncer even while acting. Chapter 5, verse 6 of the Gita says, "But renunciation, O mighty armed Arjuna, is difficult to obtain without yoga," meaning wisdom. "The sage who is earnest in yoga," the way of works, "attains soon the absolute." So Krishna tells Arjuna, renunciation is difficult without yoga. What is renunciation? It's freedom from attachment, freedom to live guided by the soul rather than the reactive mind and emotion. Doesn't that sound refreshing? And what is the yoga that leads us there? In this verse, he says karma yoga. Through selfless action, yogis gradually free themselves from ego-driven motives and develop equanimity and single-pointed awareness. Then in verse 7 of chapter 5, it goes on, "The one who is devoted to yoga practice, whose field of awareness is purified, whose soul nature is tranquil, whose senses are controlled, who realizes cosmic consciousness, that one is not tainted by actions, even though engaged in action." That's Roy Eugene Davis's translation of chapter 5, verse 7. The one who is devoted to yoga practice is not tainted by action, even though engaged in action. Why? Because the ego, what Yogacharya O'Brien called the super glue, the ego, the super glue that binds us through selfish desire, has been purified. When there's nothing for karma actions, when there's nothing for karma to stick to, action no longer binds. You know, like water on a duck. A purified field of awareness has clear signs. This is what to look for. The ego is subdued. The soul's innate tranquility is revealed. The ego is subdued. The senses are regulated. Attraction and aversion no longer dominate. The senses are regulated. One realizes the self as the self of all, a sense of oneness, the basis of the golden rule. One realizes the self as the self of all, oneness. And the fourth one, action no longer taints. Action no longer causes karma. Action no longer taints. Because egoic ownership has dissolved. This does not mean that the enlightened person or awakened person can act carelessly. It means that their actions arise from clarity, not selfishness. With karma yoga, the action may look the same outwardly, But the motivation is completely different. That's the key. What is the motivation for my action? We act not to get ahead, not to be liked, not to get something, not to acquire, but to awaken, to serve, and to be free. This is a very profound practice, just a little sidebar, and I know many of you, most of you engage in it. And I find it especially supportive, well, in every action, but especially in my most intimate relationships. Why am I taking this action of service with Yogacharya O'Brien? What am I trying to get? What is my motivation? You know, why am I getting the cup of hot water that's exact for her, that's exactly the right temperature? Or why am I singing a song in a certain way? You know, what is my motivation? Why am I doing the dishes at home with my loved one there? What is my motivation? So, you know, seriously, all the way down to changing the kitty litter. What is my deepest motivation? Why am I feeding the hummingbirds? It's a profound practice that is present for us every moment. So we no longer act to get something. We act to awaken, to serve, to be free. You know, this ancient teaching is ever new. In egoic thinking, we're about ourselves. I want, I deserve, I. And that lies at the root of personal and global suffering. Right? We can look into our own nation. I am the best nation. I get this. I own that. I should have this. I should have that. And see what happens. It's not different than our own life. Karma yoga is a medicine for that. Krishna then offers a radical vision. The knower of truth declares, I do nothing at all. Imagine that freedom. Imagine that freedom, not passivity, but action without any egoic identification. I do nothing at all. I am not the doer. Duties are fulfilled, yet inwardly there's an ease and a sense of spaciousness. This echoes the invitation Jesus offered in Matthew 2 to take on a yoke that it is easy, a burden that is light, a conscious union that frees us from ego strain and restores us to inner rest. Matthew 2:28-30. Take on a yoke that is easy, a burden that is light. Then in verses 8, 9, and 10, Roy Eugene Davis's translation of the Bhagavad Gita, verse 8, steadfast in yoga practice, whether seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, walking, sleeping, or breathing, steadfast in yoga practice, the follower of truth should think, I do nothing at all. Verse 9, when speaking, performing necessary bodily functions, holding objects, whatever is done, the devotee knows the senses only are occupied with their objects. And verse 10, having abandoned attachments, offering all actions to God, the devotee thus acts. The devotee who thus acts is not tainted by misfortune, as a lotus leaf is not wetted by water. So one who is steadfast in yoga realizes that even during all that activity, there is no identification with I as the doer. There is only the supreme I that is the witness. Yogacharya wrote and said that recently she came across a quote from the sage Krishnamurti. Someone asked him how he remained peaceful or even-minded in the face of difficult or changing conditions. And he replied simply, I don't mind what happens. I don't mind what happens. He didn't say that he didn't care. He said he didn't mind. And she said she took that to mean that he didn't allow himself to get into a mental debate about things that occurred. He didn't engage in debate about it. Then, whatever action he was inclined to take was not a reaction of a clouded mind, but a pure expression straight from the soul. I don't mind what happens. Paramahansa Yogananda wrote, if you can hold your peace and be calmly active and actively calm in all you do, you have identified yourself with your real self that dwells always in the inner chamber of peace. So that is the promise of Karma Yoga, freedom in action, awakening in the world, and peace that is not dependent on any circumstances. Om. I decided to have my focus be a reflection on verse 10 of chapter 5, living in the world without being bound by it. In verse 10, Eknath S. Warren's translation of verse 10 of chapter 5 is, those who dedicate their actions to Brahman, you could think of it as God if you'd like, those who dedicate their actions to Brahman, abandoning attachment, are not tainted by misfortune, just as a lotus leaf is untouched by water. This single verse captures the heart of Karma Yoga, renunciation in action, and then lived through the wisdom of Kriya Yoga. It answers this question, doesn't it, that many of us, many seekers still ask today. How do I live fully in this world? Working, relating, serving. How do I live fully in this world without being overwhelmed, depleted, or spiritually compromised by it? And Krishna's answer is clear. It's not withdrawal from the world, but right relationship with it. Not withdrawal, but right relationship. And Krishna gives us one of the most enduring images in all of spiritual literature, the lotus leaf. You know, the lotus grows in muddy water. Do you ever feel like your life is muddy water for the world we live in? The lotus grows in muddy water, yet its leaves remain untouched. Water rolls off effortlessly. The leaf is present in the water, but not of it. This is not a kind of indifference. It's non-attachment. It's not just saying, oh, I don't care. If I care, I'm going to create karma. That's not it. We care. We must care. We're discerning. We care. But we're non-attached. This image describes this lotus rising from the muddy water, describes the natural state of a person whose nervous system is purified. Why do we practice the Kriya Yoga practices we follow, or whatever meditation practices we follow? The image describes the natural state of a person whose nervous system is purified, whose mind is anchored in the divine self, and whose actions flow from inner stillness rather than ego compulsion. Krishna says, those who dedicate their actions to Brahman, this is crucial. The teaching is not to stop acting, but to change, to adjust the center from which action arises. In Kriya Yoga, we can think of it as action being offered through tapas, the lens of self-discipline, and through swadhyaya, the lens of self-study, and Ishwari Pranidhan, the lens of self-surrender. So these are not abstract ideals. They are very practical orientations cultivated through meditation and conscious living. One supports the other. You know, when we act from the small self, seeking approval or trying to control things or gain a sense of security, those actions bind us. They have the wrong context. They're arising from an idea that we are separate from our higher self, from God. When we act from inner attunement with the divine self, those actions liberate us. Those are pure actions. And there's a very common understanding, misunderstanding, that non-attachment means not caring. Krishna says just the opposite. The practitioner acts fully, skillfully, lovingly, but without clinging to outcomes. We give it everything we have and we let go. Last year, while Yogacharya O'Brien was on sabbatical, that was quite a beautiful playground for many of us who had more opportunities to serve in new and different ways and take on different responsibilities. Whether you're a student at the center and decided, I'm going to show up really strongly for myself and my community, or whether you're a teacher, all of us stepped up in a new way, knowing that these actions we were taking were for the betterment of all. We weren't doing it for ourselves. What a great gift we were given. And now we carry that forward. We care deeply. We give everything we can, but we have no control over the outcome. We just don't. Eknath S. Warren writes in his commentary on the Gita, "The secret of karma yoga is to act wholeheartedly without anxiety about the results." Wow, how freeing. How freeing in everything we do. And this practicing with this level of consciousness becomes possible through deep meditation. You know, when our breath is regulated and pranic flow is refined, the mind repeatedly returns to stillness. Our mental field is clarified, and we have clear discernment about the center from which we are acting. Meditation is not separate from our daily life. It is what makes this verse livable. Without this kind of inner purification, you know, non-attachment becomes just this mental concept or a spiritual bypass. But we have been given a practical method. Through regular meditation practice, the nervous system becomes calm and resilient. I mean, just that one thing changes the world for us. Reactivity decreases. Awareness shifts from ego grasping to witness consciousness. Paramahansa Yogananda wrote, "When action is performed without ego, the soul remains free." When action is performed without ego, the soul remains free. And this is exactly what Krishna is describing. That we, the practitioner, still works, still serves, still engages, still has relationships. But the sense of "I am the doer" loosens its grip. Who is working? Who is serving? Who is in this relationship? And I think this teaching could not be more timely. Many people today are, I see many people who are burned out from over-identification with their work, their job, whether it's a career or the job of caring for someone. You know, over-identified with outer action, or so many people are anxious about outcomes they cannot control, or spiritually sincere but emotionally exhausted. So I think this verse, this teaching could not be more timely. Chapter 5, verse 10, offers us a radical alternative to that way of life. It says this: do your work, be in your relationships, offer it inwardly to the divine, and release the result. It's simple. Do it, offer it, release it. Do it, offer it, release it. And this is not resignation. This is what spiritual maturity looks like. Do it, offer it, release it. Roy Eugene Davis, in his book, The Spiritual Basis of Real Prosperity, wrote, right action performed with right understanding frees the mind and awakens intuitive knowing. Right action performed with right understanding frees the mind and awakens intuitive knowing. So a practical application of this verse might look like this. You all already do this, I'm sure. Begin the day as we just did with meditation, anchoring our awareness of the self, setting the right context for our actions that are to come. Begin the day with meditation, anchoring awareness in the self. You know, I like lists. There are four things. Number two, before engaging in action, inwardly offer the work to God. Now, seriously, I keep telling you about the kitty litter box and the hummingbirds. I do this. I follow these steps each time. You can do it with everything. You're answering the phone before picking it up. Inwardly offer the conversation to God. Number one, begin with meditation. Number two, before engaging in action, inwardly offer the work to God. Number three, throughout the day, notice where attachment arises and then gently release it. Wow, it is so great when we notice that attachment arises, isn't it? It's fantastic. It is like a total time to celebrate because we are awake enough to notice it. Our witness consciousness notices. This is great news. Begin with meditation before engaging in action. Inwardly offer it to God. Throughout the day, notice attachment arising and release it. And then at the end of the day, end with reflection. Just offer the whole day to the divine. But when we live in this way, I know many of you do, over time, something subtle but profound happens. Our life continues, but the weight of it lifts. Life becomes a joy. And Krishna is not promising us a life without difficulty or a life without loss. He's pointing us to a life without bondage. Like the lotus leaf, we live in the world, we serve in the world, but we are not stained by it. This is the promise of a spiritual life lived faithfully. Action becomes worship. Work becomes yoga. And life itself becomes a path to liberation. So it's my prayer that we act fully. We love deeply. We serve wisely, rooted in the stillness of the divine self, untouched by the waters of attachment. Om. Don't you love that image of the lotus rising? We should just take little selfies and put our picture on the lotus flower rising through the mud, above the mud. This teaching is really essential in our world right now, isn't it? I'm happy to hear your reflections, questions, comments, ahas. Hi, Mina.
Namaste. Thank you, Sundarji, for the insightful teachings. And as I was reflecting on attachment to actions or situations, I found myself wondering, would that be in the form of attachment? Would that be in the form of anxiety, attachment in the form of resentment or anxiety about any situation or action that has to be done. And would that, would that be the same as attachment and release that in the same manner so to be free from that?
Yes, thank you. That's a beautiful reflection. Those are definitely signals of attachment, aren't they? Anxiety and resentment are definitely signals of, oh, I must be attached to something right now. And there are points in our life for many of us, and I think for you right now, where we are called to, our life just isn't what we thought it was going to be. We're called into situations and circumstances that we didn't foresee, that this is where our life, our vital force was going to be needed, and our heart and our physical presence. This is a very high practice in these situations in particular. To notice these, times of resentment or anxiety, and even as I shared, the exhaustion, right, that comes with some of these situations, and just do the simple thing, breathe, offer it to God, and let go. And they also can be the most profound opportunities for liberation. These challenges that come, and we all have them in different ways. So, I just try to hold it as, wow, what an opportunity for liberation. Wow. And then I forget, right? And I get anxious, or a little resentful, and I go, oh, how cool, I noticed. Back on the path of liberation track again. So, thank you for sharing your reflections, Mina. Hi, Sakshi.
Hi. This is really perfect what you were talking about today. I've been watching the monks as they've marched across the country. And excuse me, I get a little emotional about this. They just kept going, one foot in front of the other, and watching, watching mainstream America greet them, offer flowers, bow to them. What a tremendous opportunity for all of us, like to witness that. And I know in my clients, that was a tremendous opportunity for me to bring that awareness to them. A lot of them didn't know what was happening. So, it was such a healing to see those guys just kept going one step in front of the other and being peace rather than trying to become it. I mean, that was kind of the message that I kept hearing. It really puts the responsibility within us rather than trying to change something. Like you said, we just be it. and just offer that. It allows other people to come forward in their highest way, I think.
Yes.
And
Yes,
to
thank you. What a beautiful journey, right? And even if they got injured,
Yeah, one guy lost his leg.
they helped one another and they got
Yeah.
back on the path.
Yeah. One guy came in a power chair.
Yes. Yeah, and they walked with shoes or without shoes.
Yeah.
In the rain, in the sun, in the snow, in the yeah, it was a beautiful example for us of and it was their dharma. It's not everyone's dharma to do that. Some of us, our dharma is, I'm looking at some of you, I know your dharma is to make political phone calls. That is your version of walking on the path. For some of you, it's to teach meditation. For some of you, it's to care for a loved one. We all have our own dharma, but what a beautiful example. Thank you for shining a light on that, Sakshi.
You're welcome. Thank
Hi.
you.
Yes. Hi, Jaya. Can you unmute yourself?
Yes. Good morning. Hello. Thank you, Sundari, and everyone. Yeah, I have recently come to awareness of a couple of my significant others, probably struggling their whole life with ADHD. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this helps explain the chaos that I've experienced in being as close as I've been to them. And so, and then I was in a group yesterday with someone who also identifies with that, and I found myself wanting to contribute and kind of like an attachment to that. And so this teaching this morning was really helpful because I, ra rather than contributing directly in the moment, I was able to at the end, share with the group leader, and then they said, "Oh, that's great. Let me go make copies and share it with the others." And so, kind of, just a reminder to just breathe, sit, witness, practice peace. I could see the anxiety rising in me. It's like, oh, I
Yeah.
want to, and and then to not go into aversion. It's like, well, they don't want
Yeah.
me, they don't need me, I'm rejected, so.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that reflection, and especially Jaya, how you said, you basically went through the stages of meditation in your saying, okay, I need to just sit, breathe. Let my mind settle, be with my inner self, and then discern how to act. And so, this daily practice of meditation for us is just that. And what a beautiful example you shared of taking that those step by step by step into a very practical application in our complicated lives. Thank you for sharing that, Jaya. Hi, Mukti.
Thank you for all of these teachings, Sundari, so much. There's many things to reflect on, but having had a lot of anxiety, a difficulty with some things lately, it's really easy. I mean, it's nice. You talked about celebrating being awake enough to notice, and I'm noticing a lot, so there's something to celebrate. But it's really easy to still to be. What I'm realizing is that I'm just too attached, even to the feelings that I'm having of anxiety, because I'm not really doing anything wrong, but I'm not going to be released from the anxiety and have the beautiful part of that experience until I can notice it and not be so tightly connected to the circumstances that I'm reacting to. But it's not just the
Mm-hmm.
circumstances I need not to be so attached to. I
Mm-hmm.
need to not be so attached to wanting myself not to have the anxiety over the circumstance.
Correct. Well, and especially, at times of great change, times of great letting go and possibly grieving, there can be a tendency for us, can't there, to try to grab on and think that a certain emotion is the one we should be having. Sadness, anxiety, happiness, whatever, we can sometimes grab on and think that's how I'm supposed to be right now. And especially at times where there's an immense letting go, or grieving, gosh, we just, as you said, Mukti, have to be with whatever is real in the moment, and there's no right way or wrong way. So
So, but a lot of the time, it isn't so much feeling like I shouldn't be grieving or I shouldn't have these feelings, but I desperately want to. Now, that's
So
attachment. It's like,
it is.
please, I don't want to suffer.
You are right. That is the attachment that keeps you from experiencing what is there.
And then there's the attachment of self-esteem when I know what's going on, recognize it, and I can't let it go yet.
Yeah, that's understandable. It's okay. It's understandable. These things take time. They take time, and we have the prescription. We know what to do. We do our work. We offer it inwardly to the divine, even our emotions, and even our not knowing, our doing it wrong, our doing it right, all of it, all of our opinions about it. We let go of the result of it. And sometimes it just feels chaotic inside. And in some situations, that is natural and understandable, especially at times of great unimaginable loss. So, I'm going to tell you directly, give yourself a break. Give yourself a break. It's
I try to
okay.
have a sense of humor about it, to be
Yeah, you
honest.
don't even have to do that.
Okay.
It's okay. It's okay. It's a lot. It's really a lot.
Thank you.
So, it's okay. Just and you're sharing, if you're in gallery view, you can see everyone else. You're not the only one. So your sharing is supporting other people. Thank you for sharing it, and we got you.
You do. Thank
Yeah.
you.
Hi, Sumati.
There we go. Thank you, Mukti. Good morning, everyone. We hear these teachings often, but every time this particular topic comes up, it just piques my interest. It soothes me in so many ways, and this morning it's just perfectly on time. I am someone, probably not all that unusual, that I always kind of got my self-worth mixed up with what I do and how much I get done. And boy, that's just, it's really a tough practice or belief to let go of. The good news is, like I'm hearing others say, I'm seeing it in myself now. Yesterday, I got myself involved in just way too much stuff. And instead of trying to accomplish all this stuff and going home and feeling totally depleted, I was able to pull myself up. And thank God, and when I left And now I'm looking forward to another day as opposed to just feeling depleted and fail in failure. And God, what I do to myself is sometimes it's alarming. But I do I'm so grateful for this path and the teachings and my teachers. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I'm
Yes.
sure you are not the only one who gets caught up in identifying that we are what we do in the whole world. And so thank you for sharing that. And yeah, what a great blessing to be lifted from that. Hi, Lilia. I think you're still muted.
Thank you. Thank you for the teachings. Every time, I mean, how many times we have heard about liberation through letting go, but every time is new. Every time we learn something. So thank you. I was going to remark that in my pastoral care function, I had found, and in my personal also, when I had lost my husband or my child or my mother, one of the most difficult parts of the grieving process is to let go of the role that we played in the lives of other people and in our own lives. I mean, being a caregiver is something so fulfilling and important, particularly if it's your mother or your son or somebody, close to you. I had the experience when the senior minister left, and I was called to be in charge. I mean, I bloomed. I had so many things that I wanted to do, but I couldn't because there was somebody, on top doing it. But now I had the opportunity to bloom. But when there was another minister, losing that, it was the most amazing torture because, you feel like, well, all my wings now are being cut again. I cannot fly the way I used to. And so my heart goes out to you all because you were a whole year without. Okay, I don't have to explain, but you understand. So I was really praying for you and hoping that when Reverend Ellen came back, to give up certain functions that you did so well and that you performed so well. But I have found also personally that when somebody assumes what I was doing, it's like a liberation. I don't have to do it anymore. And then I can look to the new adventure of my new role. What is open to me? Because, I mean, how you call that? It's a platitude that when one door closes, two open. So, the idea is to be curious. What is happening? What is coming? And welcoming. Because there is always growth in new things that are coming. And
That's
so
right.
that's my two cents today.
Thank you. Well, your 2 cents was 22 cents. Thank you for sharing it. It was perfect. And thank you for all of your prayers. And when you were sharing, I thought about, when you were sharing about how when we have a sense of loss of a role in our life, we can see the attachment we had to that role, whether it was minister, teacher, daughter, daughter-in-law, mother, son, whatever it might have been. And I also want to let you know that we are divinely blessed at the center, that when Yogacharya O'Brien, as she's returning from her year of sabbatical, she is being so aware and conscious about returning in such a way that continues to lift all of the leaders up, because it was evident that a lot of people as leaders did rise up. And so we are very grateful that she is so conscientious about that. And it's not always that way, as you know. It's not always that way. So I feel very blessed by that. And your sharing about the grieving process, I think, is very helpful. very on point and helpful about we're letting go of a role. And what are we identifying? You know, who am I really? What am I really at the core? So thank you. Your teachings and reflections are always so insightful.